extra sweet. All right.
Exercise.
I feel like I should tell my roommate that I'm not watching the fire constantly.
Yeah.
But she's just chilling in her room, not like just eating dinner, watching TV.
Okay.
It's fine. It'll be fine.
How big is the fire? I guess the big question.
It is down to like half a log.
Half a log. I don't. Can you give me like? Can you actually just describe the size of the fire rather than giving me like how big is a log? Like how big are the logs you guys get? Do you get full size logs?
Or it's
do you get
about the logs? Size of like your forearm, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Is like a little bit meatier than that. And I'd say it was originally about a foot across, and now it's down to 8 to 10 inches, I guess.
Okay, that's a pretty big fire. Indoor fires go, that's a pretty big fire.
Yes, but the shield is closed, the glass is closed.
Okay.
But it's one of those permalogs that goes for 2 hours, and it's been going for about an hour now.
And it's inside a fireplace. I'm assuming this is the start of the episode. And I just need to clarify for people at home that we're talking about an indoor fire that's happening in a firehouse. Fireplace.
I guess if we introduced it at the beginning, it's an excuse for me to go AFK to check on it constantly.
You probably should. I don't want you to have a burning house. I'm pretty sure that people at home do want your house to burn down, but just because for the entertainment value. But like...
Purely for the entertainment.
It's probably a bad thing. It's
probably a bad thing.
Other people live there.
All right. Well, my name is Conrad Thurbleton Kirby, and while Cynic does his intro, I'm going to check on the fire.
I am Sophia Cynic, and welcome to, I guess, because he's checking the fire, episode 63 of the Scotchcast for the week of the 25th of October 2015. It's just me and Thurbleton. We have no idea what we're doing. We're only doing this episode because, essentially, we haven't done one for a while. But
a while.
Yeah, and like, I half the stuff this week, like, we don't really care about either. It's one of those things where I would love Duren to be on the show, but he has family stuff to do. I was going to just have, like, a monologue I'd jump into, but since you're still here, Thurbleton.
Yeah.
What's up?
Fire update, still contained. Still burning.
Still burning. House not on fire.
Still contained, yeah.
Yeah. Is house on fire a question mark false? That's
House on fire, false.
Wait, is that, what language is that?
Code? I don't know. In general.
BB, I guess? Because sometimes you say equals. Otherwise, other languages, you don't have to put in the equal sign.
Actually, sometimes it's equals, because if you put one equals, you're assigning the value.
That is correct.
But if you do two equals, it's a comparison.
It's a comparison, yeah. There's a very distinct and different things for people at home. Very distinct.
Computers work in mysterious ways.
I would love to have been there when the person went, let's just make it two equal signs. Like, fuck it. Like, it was probably like a half hour long argument as to what nomenclature they wanted for.
It's comparison. When you get greater than and less than.
Yes.
But then how do you
exactly
convey greater than or equal to?
Yeah.
Well, that's the greater than sign and the
equal
sign.
Is just the greater than sign an operator? Can you say if X greater than Y? Or do you have to say... Because I haven't ever used it. I've only ever used greater than or equal to. Because
No, you can do greater than or less than. That works fine.
I've never used it. Because I've always just done the opposite. If I ever came across that, I just did the opposite, less than equal to, or whatever. Anyway,
it's a little bit trickier in that you have to think a number under. Coding is a weird thing. It is fun. It's a fun sort of puzzle.
Have you been coding recently? Have you done any progress
recently
on your level?
I've been trying to. I've been lazy and playing video games mostly because they're fun. But I'm getting ready for the winter changeover. I usually do a lot of coding in the summer, and then in the winter, I'm hoping to make that a big thing too.
We were discussing you having a fire in your place, and everything makes sense now that you remind me that it's winter over there. I knew it was winter over there a second ago, but I don't know. I don't know. Like, we don't have cold winters here.
Which is funny because I definitely remember conversations with you in past winters.
Yes.
Where you were complaining about how freaking cold it is.
Oh my God.
While you may not have cold winters, you definitely have houses.
Like cold days. And yeah, yeah.
Houses straight that designed to just get rid of any heat.
Yes. Degrees Celsius to Fahrenheit. I just wanted to see do a conversion here.
Oh yeah, please.
Just live on air. Let's see. -3, 26.6 degrees Fahrenheit is the coldest it's been in recent memory. Let's see. Oh, that's sweet. And I can change it. Google's so useful. Like, I can just type here, can't I? -7. 19.4, actually. The coldest I've ever experienced in Australia is -7 degrees Celsius, which is 19.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Is that actually cold to you guys? Like, is that? Do you hear 19.4 and go, psh, pussy?
I mean, like, it's, yes, that is a cold temperature. That is not a temperature I'd want to spend several hours in.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, like, at my job, I sometimes have to go into, like, the freezer, the walk-in freezer, where it's, like, -10 Fahrenheit.
Mm. Fuck that. Well, that's the thing, though, right? It's different if it's, like, a freezer as opposed to your house, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you can be damn well sure that if it's -7 degrees outside, it is -7 degrees inside. Which brings us back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, our houses aren't made for insulation unless you, like, specifically design it to be at the start. Like, if you're building a house. Or it's, like, an advertised feature if your house has insulation. Most of the cases,
yeah, like,
doesn't.
Insulation is one of the costliest parts about building a house.
Is it?
Yes.
I have no idea. I've never...
If you want to do it right, it's, okay. I mean, like...
Like double glazed windows and all that kind of shit. Like,
yeah, there's lots of... It's... heat, like, I don't know the correct term, but it's like your thermal blueprint or your heat, like, heat signature, I guess, is another way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Is maybe a cooler sounding way of putting it.
I don't know. But, thermal blueprint sounded plenty cool. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But that's, like, architects have to, like, look at those things when it comes to designing a house because, like, okay, where will the heat... you don't want areas to be too hot, but you also don't want them to be too cold.
Indeed.
We have a nice, equal amount of...
So, at what temperature would you start using your fireplace?
I guess.
50, whoa. Wait, what's that? I'm doubling it in my head, which is probably not how any of this shit works. So,
I know,
it's
also the thing
Celsius.
Of, like, I just do it at a night where it's cold, and, like, 70 would be comfortable. And
right.
So our house usually doesn't get any, like, below 50 or, like, we have a heater going if it's that bad.
See, the problem with the fucking, like, temperature system rather than the metrics, like, measurement system is, with measurements, okay. You can easily divide. Zero is zero. As opposed to... Fucking, our zeros are in different places, which makes this so hard to tell what the fuck 50 degrees Fahrenheit is. Like, I have to actually Google 50 degrees Fahrenheit in Celsius.
Like,
to even
how cold is this?
Yeah, 50 degrees. Because you can't, like, go, oh yeah, let's just divide by two from whatever you said before. 10 degrees Celsius. That's actually not that cold. That's like a nippy day. Like, it's not t-shirt wearing weather, but it's like a light jumper wearing weather. Here.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, yeah. Like, it's also the comfort value of having a fire going, and, I mean, like, we've evolved and constructed apparatus that will heat our homes better than just a fireplace, but it's still nice just to have a fireplace going. You have some logs, get a fireplace.
Is it normal to, are you in an apartment building?
To answer your previous question, most apartment buildings do not normally have a fireplace in them.
Okay.
I am in what is more like considered a duplex or a
okay.
double. All
right.
Except there are three houses. Three
yeah, I was
going to
say that because how does the fuck would that work? How would it work if you had an apartment with a
fireplace? It looks like a house just with like several entrances and sliced up for multiple people to live in.
No, yeah, I'm in a duplex as well. No, I understand that part. I mean, like, I know that some apartments do have a fireplace. I assume that just like channels into like a metal pipe. That just routes through the walls. There's no way it's just like a big fucking cavity. Like, you'd like,
I mean,
Santa
like,
couldn't
have
that down.
I have,
is what I'm saying.
I have a hearth. There are, there's bricks and, like, it's the fireplace. It probably leads up to, like, you know, a smokestack sort of thing. There's not a chimney.
Right.
But, yeah.
Cool.
We should talk about video games.
Yeah. I don't remember how we could. Oh, yeah. How's your fire going? Before we talk about
it. Let me give it a quick check.
Once we need to do a pre-video game check. Okay.
All right. We're back.
For people at home, we haven't actually been playing many video games. I personally have been blowing stuff up in the middle of nowhere. So I've essentially... I can talk about that. Just between you and me. That Thurbleton's not here. It's just us. Blowing stuff up is pretty fun, but it's also fucking terrifying. Like, you essentially... Hello, Thurbleton. I hear you coming
back.
Hello.
Someone on fire.
Yes. I'm just discussing what blowing stuff up feels like. So, like, it's one thing... There's two essentially types of blows that I'm now qualified for after the last 2 weeks of training. One is called logistics blow, which is essentially just like old ordnance that's probably still safe. Like literally you can drop it and it won't do anything. And like in general, you just like shit that we no longer use or want to dispose of or marked for disposal. I'm allowed to do those. And those are really easy. You essentially just fucking strap P4 to them, in multiple places going by manuals, et cetera, that you get as part of our job. And then you just fucking let it off, right?
Yeah.
The other type of blow I'm now qualified to do is what's called a blind, which is literally like you get a phone call in the middle of the day because some dude on a beach found some piece of ordnance that's fucking washed up ashore. Or like some farmers found it like half buried in their fucking land. And you have to like go out there and take care of it, right? And like that second one is fucking terrifying. I cannot describe how fucking crazy it is to, like, there's a list of, for us, 18 hazards. I know for more advanced EOD operations, there's like 25 hazards. But for us, there's 18 hazards, which includes stuff like EMR, static EMR, which means, like, if you accidentally like create a static discharge between you and the ordnance, it'll go off. Or EMR, which is if you transmit near this ordnance, it will go off. And then you have all the way up the other side, which is like piezo fucking fused items, which is like if you cast a shadow on this ordnance for too long, it could go off.
What?
Like freaky shit.
Just, man. Like, if there's too much sunlight on it?
No, it's specifically, like, fast heating and cooling. So if it's a particularly hot day, so direct sunlight's a large issue, and you cast a shadow on it for too long, then that part of the ordnance could cool significantly faster than the outside, the rest of the ordnance, which could be enough of a temperature differential between the fuse and the casing to create an explosion. For it to fuse to arm and then explode. That's the... So there's like a gamut between those two things of like, there's movement, which is like, if you pick it up and move it, that's bad, it'll probably go off. And then there's cocked striker, which is like literally, if you imagine like a grenade with the pin like on the side, and like a spring that like forces the pin over to hit like a blasting cap equivalent, that'll initiate the rest of the charge. We call that a cocked striker. So essentially some ordnance have various mechanisms for cocking your striker. So they either like there's a spring behind the striker to drive it forward, but there's also one like at 90 degrees to it that forces up into a cavity. And the jarring force of an ordnance hitting of the ground would be enough to displace the pin away from that cavity, depressing the second spring, which will align it with a hole that the first spring would drive it through to create that initial like shock that initiates the explosion. So some ordnance have a cocked striker hazard, which means essentially if you do fucking anything to it, it'll go off. Like if you like accidentally move the ground it's sitting on, or touch it when you're placing your donor charge, or like essentially just fucking anything. Just if you create vibrations at the right, if you walk up to it as opposed to crawling up to it, you may set it off. And, like, just, yeah, it's fucking terrifying. Especially, like, because we did a live range clearance on our last day, which means we got sent to one of the places where the military, the army here, does some, what do they call it? Assault grenade testing and training. So, essentially, there's, like, a fucking field with, like, short grass in some places, but, like, knee-high grass in other places that we know is probably filled with unexploded grenades.
Wow, okay.
And so you're essentially, like, fucking moving at a snail's pace, specifically looking down to make sure you're not stepping on anything. And it's, like, slowly sidling in, like, a long Emmy Bob line through this field and looking for unexploded grenades. We found 9. We found more than 9, actually, but we didn't have enough donor charges to do more than 9, so we just did the 9 and then marked them on a map and marked whatever we couldn't do on the map and then fucking got the hell out of there.
Like, this reminds me of, I can't remember which country it was. It was something in, I want to say, Eastern Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they announced that, like, with the help of, I think it was, like, Norway or something, they had finally gotten rid of all, like, they were able to declare their country, like, landmine free.
Yeah.
Which is possibly worse than the, like, than grenades, if only because.
Yeah.
Landmines are worse. You can see grenade for the most part.
So here's the thing, right? There's, both are kind of fucked up. So landmines are usually, like, worse because they're most of the time they're disguised in some way. They're either like covered in covered in dirt or like taped to a tree in some fashion, or attached to a tree in some fashion, and like they're purposely put there in most cases to be easily obscured by anything around. The problem with grenades is that they're small and in many cases green. And also they tend to have a cocked striker, whereas, mines are usually pressure activated or movement activated. So between the two, mines are harder to spot, but grenades are more like angry. We use the term angry. So essentially they're more easily set off when it's a UXO, like when it's a blind. So yeah, it's both a shit. Like for us, we were clearing out gold tops, or what we called gold tops, which are these they're a HEDP, so high explosive dual purpose round. That's like, you know, in games where you have your M4 and you have that grenade launcher below it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the things that you can fire out of that grenade launcher, and it's essentially a shaped charge jet, which is essentially a anti-vehicle kind of penetrating warhead, but followed up by a high explosive warhead. So it's both. It's a dual purpose round. So if you don't get a direct hit, maybe your fragmentation or blast will do some damage as well. So those are considered to have a cock striker mechanism, to the point where even though they're really small, they can just fuck you up if you're placing a charge next to them. The problem is with those ones is that the donor charge, which is stipulated, is a very small little kind of thing. So you have to get it really close. Like I'm talking 3 to 6 millimeters, so about a quarter of an inch next to it. But you can't touch it because there's a cock striker. And in some cases, we just couldn't get our donor charges close enough. So we went, fuck it. And we used a bigger explosive from slightly further away, which you can do. But note that, like, explosives propagate, the blast wave propagates at to the power of a third. So, like, think of a sphere. So, to the power of a third. So, essentially, even if you have twice as much explosives, it's not you can't actually take it that much further away. Like, in some cases, if you have, like, really flat ground, you can have, like, a explosive that's 10 times as large and have it, like, a foot away. But in other mm-hmm. cases, if it's, like, wedged into the ground at a weird angle on, like, in like a weird like kind of fucking knoll, then you really do have to get up close and personal with it. And as I said, yeah, fucking scary. That's what I've been doing for the last 2 weeks, for people wondering why we haven't done the podcast. And I have all my fingers, so that's one thing I've been doing.
That's well done.
So that's one thing. And aside from that, I've been just playing a shitload of Destiny. I don't know.
Yeah, okay, so let's get into it.
Okay,
how's that
So
have we talked about Taken King?
We haven't talked about Taken King. We have not talked about. Well, I haven't talked about Taken King. I don't think.
Okay.
On this show, maybe you have. Have I?
I don't know.
So I don't, since the last episode, one thing that has certainly happened is that the hard mode raid came out this week.
Yes.
So I know we haven't talked about that. And what I've learned from the hard mode raid is that Bungie had me with the Taken King. I don't know if they just kind of lucked out or not on that one. Like, I heard stories about these guys from the Diablo team giving them a speech on, like, how to win players back and reduce randomness and increase, like, legitimate, like, earned rewards and all this kind of stuff. And most of those changes, they implemented it in Taken King, and that's what won me back over. And then you can get back to, okay, this is a raid that was designed by the same dudes to the Vault of Glass, which is probably still the best content in Destiny. So it's got, like, really great, well-thought-out raid that's really fun, really interesting encounters that require a lot of teamwork. But some of the greatest memories I have from Destiny is specifically hard mode versions of raids, which are fucking difficult. The only issue is, for this hard mode raid, I haven't felt that difficulty spike, except for the final boss.
From what I've heard is, like, apart from a checkpoint and the jumping puzzle...
Yes.
And one other thing, which I can't recall what the guy was talking about, mm-hmm. like, very little has been changed with the hard mode of this. Is that
exactly.
correct?
Yeah, it's almost fucking...
Also, for folks at home, fire check, still good.
Fire check? Oh, yeah, awesome, good, thank God. Your house is still not burning. House burning equals false. All right.
Yes.
No. That doesn't
no, I mean,
work.
We can set it. It's like it's checked. All right, set
okay.
not on fire. Good.
So yes, it's equal false. All right, awesome. Because I was going to say equal equals false equals true would be the actual.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, yes. So essentially, I can't be even after about 12 or 16 hours of grinding, I can't beat the last boss, but the only reason I can't do that is because my gear just is not good enough. I don't have a touch of malice. I don't have, like, a bunch of these, like, really high-end
In other words, you're not being hindered by the just executing in the fight. You know what to do, and you're doing all that.
Yeah.
I assume, like, you're dying because of a rage timer or something.
Yes, kind of. So how the final boss fight works in the King's Fall, which is the new raid, is that multiple times during the fight, there's what is essentially a gear check. Like, the big enemy boss dude, like, gets up and prepares a big attack that will instant wipe your party, unless you stagger him. And the only way to stagger him is to do enough damage in a short enough amount of time. So it's essentially what I think it was coined in the WoW era, what's called a gear check, which is literally if your party is geared well enough, you can overcome that check and therefore continue the fight. The issue here is obviously that let's face it, I don't have, like, there's one item I don't have, which is a ghost shell that's keeping me below the 310 light, like, level. Like, the final fight of that raid, unlike the rest of the raid, is recommended light 320. Which is the new level cap. They only just introduced that level cap. So none of my gear gets me below 310. And if you're more than 10 light below content, then it becomes ridiculously difficult. So I'm missing one piece of gear, literally a ghost shell, to put me above 310. And I'm also missing the specific weapon that's just perfect for that fight. So I want to get both this week and give it another try. But I've done the rest of the raid, and I have to say, it was actively disappointing how easy the rest of the raid was. Specifically for Gulf of the Glass, and I have very fond memories of it, like, we could waltz through Vault of Glass normal mode in, like, 25, 35 minutes, but that same raid team would take, like, 2 hours, 2.5 hours to get through hard mode Vault of Glass, back when it first came out. Even after first, like, not even our first time, like, even after two or three times, we'd still take that long time to get it right. Because some of it is just really hard, and that... Vault of Glass was never really about, like, team dynamics specifically. It was more about how good are you at shooting things in the weak spot. It was like very much like you have to kill this, like, a lot of things really quickly. They're going to keep coming at you. And if you don't kill them fast enough, they will kill you because they do a lot of damage to you as well. So this one is more about, like, and this is probably an element as to why the design doesn't carry over. King's Fall is more about, hey, as a team, you have to do these specific actions in the right order. And then if you do that, you're most likely able to pass. Like, it's not even a case of being very good at shooting. Like, you don't have to do that. You just have to be at the right place at the right time and do the right thing. It's all about, like, what you actively do as a team rather than how good you are and how good your gear is in most cases. And because of that, as long as you continue doing those things, that those skills are immediately transferable to hard mode, which makes it, like, piss easy until the last boss, which is only hard because everything's 320 light and I'm nowhere close to that. So it's really disappointing in general, I think, the hard mode raid. And that's it. That's all I've got this week. Like, I came back from Outfield blowing shit up and then fucking jumped into Destiny for 2 days. And I'm still gearing up. That's my Destiny update. Templeton, what have you been up to?
A lot of the same, like the old familiar, I guess. I have been playing a couple, like, neat things. I guess 'tis the season for spooky games and whatnot. I played a little bit, like two or three episodes of Typing of the Dead, Overkill, which is a very old game.
Why did you do this? I know it's a great game. It's a great game, but
basically, because I play game, there are a couple friends I play on a weekly basis with, and one of them, they had injured themselves. Mm-hmm. I think it was while they were riding a bike, they broke their hand or something.
Huh.
But basically, yeah, they have a broken hand, so they can't play anything. So,
thinking about it, that really fucks you up in terms of what you can do. Yeah.
Like, it was the left hand, so they can still use the mouse and then type slowly, but for the most part, it was just, like, they couldn't do it. So I played some Undertale a couple weeks ago.
Right. I was going to say he should play Banner Saga, because that's a really good, like, mouse-only kind of game.
Yeah, I'll recommend it to him.
Yeah.
We did a little bit of that. Adorable game, great soundtrack, I love it. I still haven't even beaten it, but I've just seen so many other people.
It's like 5 hours long. What are you doing?
I'm not playing it that often. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
I don't know.
It's over.
It's got to be more than 5 hours. Anyway,
it is, like,
moving on.
My total playtime. Okay, you keep talking. I'm going to get my total.
You keep talking, yeah. Typing the Dead or Overkill is what I played recently. That is just a really fun game for if you have good typing skills. It's a fun sort of endorphin thing of playing it and then really silly, like, the silly stuff that you end up typing. It's a really well-designed game, really smartly designed.
It's 7 hours long. Undertale is 7 hours long. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm met the Sands and Papyrus is pretty much where I'm at. Right. I took my time with the tutorial, I guess.
Yeah, that's okay, sure.
But yeah, that's a good game. The main things I've been playing, we can talk briefly about Dark Souls. Unfortunately, past tense.
That's a video game.
I did a permadeath run. Yes, Dark Souls, which many people believe is better than Dark Souls 2.
It is better than Dark Souls 2.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I did a permadeath run, or at least I attempted it. I'd never tried it before. I've been watching some streamers and just going back to it, I guess, getting ready for Dark Souls 3, maybe. I'm not sure what brought this on, but I'm not that into the speedrunning. I figured I'd try just a permadeath. I'd never tried anything like it before. And it was a ton of fun just because it was purely an exercise in, like, I'm curious how far will I actually get.
Right. How far did you get?
I made it to Capra.
Capra Demons. That's the third boss? Second boss? Third?
Okay, so here's how it went down. I did Taurus Demon, which isn't technically a boss. He's just a really tough NPC that is the first fight.
Yeah.
Did Undead Chapel. Did Titanite Demon, Moonlit Butterfly.
Shit. Holy cow.
Took out Havel, took out the Hydra.
Damn.
And then went to Capra, and I took out both of his dogs. And it was a thing of, like, I'm close to the entrance. He's at the bottom of the stairs, and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, I should be okay here. Take out both of his dogs, and then he just leaps the, like, crosses the distance in one jump and kills me from half health.
Right. And so, but you weren't playing soul level one. Like, you were leveling this whole time, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was super leveling. I was pulling every cheese in the book.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So this was Babby's first permadeath run, but it was a lot of fun.
Nice. That's cool. I think we had this discussion before the show aired, but I just need to say it here. I hate permadeath shit. I will never do it. I never did hardcore difficulty in Diablo. I just, losing progress is the single worst thing to me ever. Also, we have like a raging storm outside, so you may hear wind.
I can hear wind.
Yeah, there's maybe a lot of wind happening. But yeah, like, so I hate it. I hate, like, getting items and then, like, losing them, like, as you do with Diablo, fucking, that shit. Like, half the awesomeness of playing Diablo is the loot grind. And if you have, like, a hardcore character in that, all the items on him just disappear when you die. Like, I fucking hate that. I hate, the idea of investing time and not having something to show for it later. In general. So, it's probably part of the reason why I don't play much PvP anymore as well. Because it just feels like I'm not really getting anything from it. And I know, like, in most cases, all you're getting in video games is a number going up. But that's something. I don't know.
Quick fireside check. Still not on fire, so we're good on that.
Yeah, cool. Good to know. Yeah, fire still got.
What I enjoyed about I don't know if I'll do another permanent run. I probably won't actually. Mm-hmm. At least with this game, is I enjoyed the story that evolved from trying to do this.
Yeah,
and I realized that if I keep doing it in Dark Souls, it's like it's something akin to like a Spelunky run.
Right.
Spelunky, it changes every time. It works. The idea of a permadeath run works well with procedural games because they change every time.
Right.
And roguelikes are very often like, hey, you only have the one life. So every run is a permadeath run.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Don't play those either. Just put that out there. Don't play roguelikes.
But yeah, I as longtime fans of the show know, I do enjoy my Spelunkies.
Yeah.
I think there is something to be said in doing the same thing over and over again. Like, this is kind of what the allure of MOBAs is.
Right.
It's the same level always, but the different approaches you take to it. Like, I might do another permadeath run where I am only a wizard.
Right. Yeah.
Or a sorcerer or something. Like, just doing the same build with the same run, trying to accomplish it. There's the sense of like, hey, I finally did it, and there's that joy. But otherwise, with Dark Souls, it doesn't work as much. But it was definitely a fun exercise. Anybody who's a longtime fan should just give it one try. It adds a whole new level of stress and endorphin rush every time you beat a boss or a tough fight.
Yeah. Oh, wait, you've done a soul level one run as well?
No, I've not done a soul level. Well,
that should be what you try next.
At deprived your level 8. Is that what you mean? Like never leveling up?
Yeah, never leveling. I'm pretty sure, isn't it one of them? No, deprived is the highest level from memory, isn't it?
It might be the high. It's you start off with nothing.
You start off with no equipment, but the highest level. I think there's a different one that might be
there,
3. I mean,
there could be one where I'll have to look into it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I know from the original Dark Souls that soul level 1, what's called a soul level one run, was really interesting, and that gives you a greater understanding of the depth of how good that game is, mainly because of just how perfect it plays, especially when you're running it at 60 frames on a PC. That should be the next step. If you've just done a hardcore run, try that and see how you feel.
Okay. But yeah, that has been the main thing. Also, I've been playing some Guild Wars 2 with the expansion coming out.
Oh, shit.
Heart of Thorns.
Wait, so is the expansion's out now, right?
Yes.
Okay. We need to talk about that. We need to talk about it. Okay.
I mean, like, we can do a full breakdown of it. I know I'd want you to see some footage of it as well.
Right.
I guess all I can say, because I've been playing it for multiple hours today, but I've really mm-hmm. only sunk a couple hours into the new content.
Mm-hmm.
I've started leveling a Revenant. Okay, so they have a new class called the Revenant.
Revenant.
I'm sorry. And their main thing, I think they're... I'd be curious for you to look at it, because I think it's a throwback to, like, a Guild Wars 1 fighter of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what, but, yeah, it's like they're heavy mail or heavy armor, but they, like, seem to be a lot more magic and, intensive, I guess.
Huh. I'm trying to think if there's anything equivalent to that in Guild Wars 1. Not really. Like, but the thing about Guild Wars 1 is you had a subclass, so you could have...
Yeah.
All kinds of shit happening in that, but yeah.
But yeah, I've mainly been running around with the new zone, which I feel this way often with every major Guild Wars 2 update. Like, I know when the wardrobe thing first came out, I was very I was very against it, and I've since warmed up and found ways about it. But it's just either I am lousy at understanding the tutorials, or they're doing a bad job of conveying them.
How so?
Because what happened with this was the new thing. They're keeping the level cap at 80, even though they're adding like 5 new zones.
Which I hate. I hate that. Like, I really don't like that. By the way.
Yeah. But what they're doing instead is adding masteries, which are sort of like. The skill point tree that you can start doing at 80. And a lot of it will just let you progress through the new content in a better way. They aren't really like adding new abilities or anything as far as I can tell.
Being better at using a glider or whatever, right?
Yes. Right. Or even getting access to a glider. So basically I and actually a couple others in my guild logged on, started playing the new content right before our guild was ready to do the Claim the Guild Hall event.
Right.
And I'm sure after a couple weeks I will enjoy this game. I recommend anybody who's on the fence for it, check it out. Or even just jump back into it and not do any of the new content. Just see what the new systems are like, because it is fun. But I am about to, like, getting that out of the way, I am going to talk a little bit of trash about the game.
Okay, nice. All right, that's what I'm here for. No, like, it's one of those things where...
I had a really lousy experience, and it sounds like a lot of other people had, like... They didn't have as good experience as I figured, like, we would have.
Like, people at home know that I am off the Guild Wars 2 train. But you're not. Yes. And you still play Guild Wars 2
I am one of the few people who... Yes, I play it regularly. Yeah. I have several characters. I enjoy the leveling process, all of that stuff.
Right.
They have a lot of nice systems in place that let you like speed through that, or at least go at a fast pace.
Yeah,
moderately fast.
Unlike the Destiny new expansion, like King's Fall being shit or whatever, or being disappointing. I'm not here to. I just want to hear your thoughts. I'm not going to be judgmental, and try not to be judgmental. I just want to know what. Tell me a tale, Thurbleton, of what happened to you. I've actually heard this before, so go ahead.
And, like, other people might have a different experience with this. So here's a couple of facts. The Guild Hall, it's something that, like, your guild has to claim. You have a choice between two of them, which...
is a stupidly low number, by the way, but...
That is the other thing, is a lot of the guild activities, right. Guild missions, for example, for years, we only had, like, anywhere from 2 to 5 options when it came to a certain type of guild event. Guild puzzles, there were always only 3.
Yeah.
Guild challenges, there was like 5 maybe. And so like you do all of them in the course of like 2 months and we've been playing this game for years.
Yep. As I said, in a game called Guild Wars, I continue to be surprised.
Well, no, like they have added like with this expansion, there are guild versus guild activities.
Yeah. Yes. Guild versus guild is new, and that's awesome. That's freaking great.
The number of things you can do with your guild, and granted, like, some guilds are, like, 20 people of just friends that are barely on all at the same time. Some guilds are 500 people strong that are, like, it's hard to design content for both of that. I understand. Jumping back, claiming your guild hall is a one-time thing. It's this activity that, like, it's apparently very challenging. I haven't actually seen any of it, but I was hoping to see it the last night. So I logged on, like, all right, let's do this. Oh, it's in one of the new zones. Okay, well, I'll get into the new zone. Oh, you have to go through traditionally, you have to do the story content first. Right. And you have to do several missions into the story content. I found out later that you had to do several story missions as well as general activities just to get the glider. Which the glider is needed to get to the entrance to get into the instance of the guild hall to then start the event with everyone else to claim it.
Oh, okay. All right. Sure.
Yes.
So everyone needs to do a bunch of these activities to get gliders so we can start doing that thing.
Yes, and we had done this on, like, we were doing it Saturday night. The game had been out since Friday morning. So
there's positives here, right? Like, first and foremost, I really like the idea of a piece of content that's gated by some, like, mechanics-based, like, gating system. I love the idea that, hey, the new thing for the new thing is that you can glide. And we're going to gate the new content behind actually gliding. I do not like gating, like, multiplayer content, like, really significant multiplayer content behind, pointless busy work. Like, especially when it comes to stuff like guild halls, which is so integral to what Guild Wars, or at least used to be about. You should just be able to fucking just get in there and do that. Like, it's kind of bullshit they don't give you glider or straight up.
Example. So, and I realize, like, you know, it's who knows the development and the choices they had to make for this, but yeah. I'll say the facts and then I'll say, like, I guess my main issues with it. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of us found out that rather than, like, because it's like, oh, this thing's happening in 30 minutes, we need to get there.
Yeah,
like, that was the main entry, like, main thing was like, oh, we have more people on than our guild expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, granted, the game just came out. There's a lot of people interested. A lot of people want to see this event.
Yeah.
Our Mumble server of 50 strong got capped before the event even started. There's people there waiting, wondering when we're going to start. There's people who are like, oh, we're trying to get here. And you can use, there's a consumable item called Waypoint to a Friend, which basically we found could get you into the new zone without doing the story stuff.
Right.
Gotcha. And it's like, all right, well, let's start getting people in there, and then we'll ferry them. The problem is, and this is a negative in this case, but it's overall a very cool thing. Even though there's only five zones being added, the zone in question, and I assume the others are just the same, are massive.
Right. Okay.
They are, like, the biggest zone I've ever seen. Like, world versus world size kind of zones.
Jeez.
And not only that, verticality is a major player. There's actually, like, they could be broken down into three fragmented levels. So you can only, like, you're walking on, like, specific pathways, but it's across three different levels. And so, like, the lower you are, you're fighting a lot more Mordremoth, which are these, like, plant creatures, the minions of the new plant dragon. But then you get higher up and you're walking among like spires and tree branch bridges, and you get higher up to the top, you're on a canopy. So it's a neat thing, but when you don't have a glider and you're trying to get from one end of the map to the other,
right? Yep.
And there's only, like, the mesmers are trying to get people over, but it's basically they were fighting a losing battle kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was it eventually came to the decision that some of us, we just, like, hey, we're not going to be able to do this tonight. We'll try tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because our Overflow Guild was going to do the other guild claiming thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, again, there's only two.
Right.
So I call it a night. Apparently, that lasted, like most missions and whatnot usually take like an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
The guild hall claiming event took several tries and apparently several hours to finally accomplish, so much so that some people had to leave before they could finish it. And actually, having a larger amount of people made it, like, it scales up to add more people, to, like, add more enemies to make it, like, a challenging fight.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently this was, like, hindering them rather than just, like, so that that's just a balance and tweaking thing.
Yeah.
That's something that, like, and it's a one-time event. I understand all those things. So apparently maybe it's a good thing I didn't see that, because it's very challenging, apparently. So the next day, I was like, all right, well, let's get this glider stuff. I do the story content. That is well done. The VO work and like the animation, the rigging, and like the all that's great.
I need to see that stuff to see whether I agree with that, because last time we've had this discussion, we have different standards for what is well done in MMO.
Apparently, I guess it's just been a long time since I've done story content, but it was just weird having your character talk in game. And then, like, you take your helmet off, and your character's mouth is moving in game, and it was just like,
oh, wow.
It was a weird moment. I'm not sure if it's been doing it the whole time, just because it's been so long since I've done story content.
Yeah,
and most of that stuff usually happens in cutscenes. So I do that, and then it after a couple missions, it gives me some progress towards my first mastery point, which is, to get the glider. But as I recall, like, there weren't any tooltips that popped up, like the tutorial kind of thing of saying, like, hey, this is how gliders, like, this is how a mastery system works, this is all this.
Right.
There was some things of just like, hey, go do content in the new zone to progress your mastery.
Right. Huh.
Which is pretty much how, like, as far as I can tell, that's how the new system works, is when you hit 80... as you may know previously, you could keep getting an experience bar, and that would just give you ability points.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you just never went higher than 80, but you could keep getting levels.
Yes.
Since ability points are gone, and, like, the mastery systems got reshuffled, they're incorporated to this other thing. Instead, as from what I can tell, when you complete a level, you gain a mastery point, I guess.
Right. Okay.
And so just doing the activities and doing mastery points or something, like, it was very confusing how – I basically learned that I just had to brute force do a bunch of stuff in zone, and I got a mastery point. There are, like, places of power I could commune to get master, like, to get that. But it was just like, wait, what's going on? and that, like, that is the number one big beef, is I eventually got the glider. And even then, like, I finally realized it took several jumps off cliffs to figure out what button I had to press. But then once I figured it out, it was like, oh, I can just do a short jump. And since I know what button to press, I can then press it even before it gives me a prompt, and I start hang gliding.
Huh. Okay.
So I feel like if they'd just done like a tutorial level, and I wouldn't be surprised if like the developers had a tutorial level and it just like wasn't good in testing, or players were like wanting to skip it or something.
Yeah.
But the lack of a tutorial, or the lack of a story mission where you get a hang glider, really rubbed me the wrong way, I guess.
Hmm.
And like, I eventually figured it out, and I later found out that the guild hall day two thing with the overflow guild, which was supposed to happen the day we're recording, partially, I guess, we didn't have enough people online, and then also with the as challenging as it was last the night before, we're just skipping that. So I guess next recording I will hopefully be able to tell you what that's like.
Cool. So currently, overall, like, so with the mastery system, just going back to that, essentially your biggest gripe is that they don't really introduce the new mechanics well enough, or would you?
I mean, like, the new mechanics are explained well enough in that, like, they're handed out piecemeal, and they're displayed, like, hey, this is when you get hang gliding, this is when you get to interact with, they aren't necessarily new abilities as additional ways to interact with the environment, which are highlighted with the new zones, with the verticality. Like, hey, once you master hang gliding, you can master how to use these updrafts to ascend even higher with your hang glider, and like other neat stuff like that.
Right.
It is the process in which you accrue the points to use those abilities.
Right.
That, like, there was wording there, but it was very confusing wording, and I guess I could have just asked my guild, like, hey, how do you do this? But, like, I would like that stuff to be explained. Even if they just said, hey, go do stuff in the world.
To gain levels, to gain points. Yeah.
And to an extent, they said that, but they said that in a very, like, minimal amount of words possible, which was the confusing part.
Yeah. But I don't know. Does it feel like you have to do a lot of leveling to get the most out of those abilities? Like, is that...
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, if it... It feels like I have to do like 25 to like 30 levels worth of content.
Holy shit.
Well, I mean, like, because you can only, I have to do enough activities to do that kind of stuff. There are
places of power, like, as you said, yeah.
Places of power, and then also I could just do the thing of like look for a large group of people just running around and try and tag along with them.
Right.
But since we're still in the early days of the expansion, It's hard to, like, it's hard to find that, and also at the same time, we're several days into the new content, and so large groups of people who would be doing that are already doing that in the future zones. Like, I've missed the train to an extent,
right,
and I have to wait for everyone to finish the content and come back, and, like, the amount of the player base sort of level out.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, I had a similar experience with Destiny in that, like, I came... to the new expansion maybe like a week late, but most of that you can just do it yourself, and it's really quick. Like, it's the equivalent of six levels.
Yeah, and then
eight,
like,
levels that I have to do.
The actually doing it myself, like, I don't mind that. That is fun.
Yeah.
It's just like I have eight characters.
Holy shit.
it's a game where, like, every time I log in, I, like, there are a lot of ways to get levels, and you can actually get items that are called Tomes of Experience just for logging in. Like, every so often you'll get a Tome of Experience, which is just like, hey, you use it and you level up. And so I would just stockpile them, and then, like, hey, I have this other character, go up 20 levels, and then I won't play you again for another month.
Right. Wait, so before we move on, how is the Revenant? How do you like Revenant? It's my most, like, for me, the biggest question mark for this new one.
That's the thing. I just haven't played that much of them.
Hmm. I couldn't do that. I would need
they seem
to have, yeah, I would needed to have leveled 1 to 80 straight up. Do they give it like a new? So is it just like you pick a revenant and you just do the same 1 to 80?
Mm-hmm.
There's not like a new 1 to 80 curve in the new zone.
No, the new zones are all 80.
Fuck me! I think that's, they really missed something with that. I think they really did.
Well, I mean, like, they missed something, but also it's these new zones, and I guess I can give, like, a different assessment once I've completed all of them, but it seems like they were just going for
endgame
quality over quantity. Like,
right.
They wanted to, like, they only did 5 zones instead of 12 or 15 because they wanted to make those really good zones.
Yeah.
And a lot of the events are like, they're really fun. Like, there's one where you – so – prior to the expansion, the huge fleet goes out to try and fight. And, of course, the huge fleet is destroyed utterly in this massacre. And it's up to the adventurers to save the day.
Yep.
And there's people scattered all about. And so you do this mission where you're just, like, this guy's on patrol looking for survivors. And he just ends up, like, fighting bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And then partway through, he gets pissed off. And then he just becomes an enemy as well, and a giant bear, because he's a Norn. And so not only do you have to kill the thing you were fighting, but then you also have to shoot, like, you have to kill, you have to knock some sense, beat some sense into this other guy.
Okay.
And so the style of events have improved a bit.
Okay.
Cool. In that they are entertaining and fun.
And like, new ideas. They're playing with new ideas as well, which is always good. In that, like, different stuff you haven't done before. Which is what it's at.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Well,
if you haven't played...
There's some stuff.
That... Have you played with your new subclass or your new specialization or what they're called?
It's that's I would wish I could say yes, but it's the thing. I need masteries.
What?
I'm pretty sure I have to use masteries to unlock that.
Oh, fuck you. There's no way. There's no way that could be. We need to fact check this podcast. that sounds too ridiculous. It sounds too far. That's taking it too far. If you have to do bullshit to unlock your fucking...
We'll give an update next time.
And with that, take a short break and then go into the news?
Yeah, sure.
Cool.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. Okay, I think I know what to do.
What?
Let me just see if I can equip it now. Yeah, okay. So, you have to have hero points,
mm-hmm.
which you then invest in the elite specialization.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to your build, and remember how I told you they replaced it with the three horizontal bars?
Yeah.
You have to then make one of those three bars the elite specialization. Even if you don't have that completely fleshed out, you have to put that impartial one in there, and then you can equip the weapon.
That sounds dumb. I'm sorry. What? What do you mean it's one of your fucking trait lines? How does that even make sense? I thought they're going to add more diversity, not fucking take away some.
Well, I mean, like, I can only have three active trait lines at any one time.
Exactly, and one of them has to be your specialization if you want to use it.
Actually, yeah, when you played, you could have like, 10 in all six.
Yeah, and all six fucking specializations. Oh, sorry, trait lines.
And now they made it so you go all the way in three of them.
That's so dumb. That's fucking dumb.
I mean, this potentially lets them control the balance better among...
Shut up. Let's start recording. I'm mad. I'm actually mad.
Who says we're not already recording?
I'm actually fucking mad about this. That is so annoying. Like, every time they make something, like, a cool decision, they do it in the most, like, ham-fisted, stupid way possible. Like, ultra-streamlining bullshit way possible that I fucking cannot stand. It is shit. Like, the fact that you have to remove... Not only can you not have spread across all fucking six, I think it was, or fives, trait lines. You have to remove one to fucking use a specialization. That is complete and utter garbage.
Sorry, I'm also eating.
Because, like, essentially that makes... That means you only have two trait lines. Because I assume the specializations are good enough that you'd want to use it.
The new trait line has bonuses designed for using the weapon of the, like, that the trait line adds. So, like, with thieves, I get to use a staff.
Yay.
A lot of the other trait lines are like, hey, you get bonus weapons with daggers, you get bonus weapons with swords. Like, when you're using a gun, you do X, Y, Z more damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, with this new trait line, it's like, hey, when you're using a staff, oh, hey, I'm using a staff since I want, like, it's...
So what you're saying is they haven't added much to the game. They haven't added much at all to the game is what you're saying.
I mean, they're making it so every class can use one additional weapon.
Yeah, one fucking new weapon for each class.
It's so great.
One fucking new weapon for each class. That's what this is boiled down to.
It's so great. My Mesmer can use a shield now.
This is so stupid. That's... Oh my god. When the game came out, I wanted them to add... A whole new fucking weapon. At least one new weapon for the Fex expansion. Like, for everyone. Like, essentially, not just like, oh, if you equip this fucking, like, subclass, you can fucking use one additional weapon. I meant, like, a whole new branch of weapons, because it was already limiting enough the fact that you fucking can only use a couple weapons per class, and those weapons are fucking set skills, the set five skills for each weapon, or whatever it is. Five? It's five, right? Or three for a one-handed weapon, and two for an offhand? That's it, right?
Yeah, you have five weapon abilities and five skill.
So, like, abilities. At a minimum, I wanted them to have, like, a bunch of at least ways to mix and match. So you could have, like, warriors with, like at least have more interbranching shit and whole new groups of weapons. So, like, great axe or something like that. Like, something that would add like more diversity to the whole game. But like every little fucking thing they add to the game, they take away when they also add. It's as if they're playing around this stupid status quo as opposed to actually adding legitimate diversity. Because fuck it, I don't see anyone not using a specialization for the first couple months unless they're crazy people who are just like stubborn. Everyone's going to try out the new specialization. So for the next couple of months, it's going to be everyone with only two trait lines and this stupid new specialization straight line, which is, by the sounds of it, not actually that interesting. And it makes me so fucking mad when they said they were adding subclasses, but all it is essentially a replacement to one of your trait lines. And that plus the previous statement where they took away the ability to spread across all spatial trait lines as well. Like, it's just at every fucking level. I'm so not happy with this. When you said that it was potentially the fact that this new subclass was locked behind some PvE shit and the mastery system.
Masteries.
That was preferable to this. That was far preferable. Like, how cool would it be if you had a whole new set of traits and everything? Like, you actually had, like, essentially a doubling of the classes in Guild Wars 2. That would have been awesome. But no. But no. Of course it couldn't be that. That's too hard to balance.
My Guardian, what if I want to use, like, longbows and traps? I could do that now.
Yeah, but then you couldn't. Oh, my God. Oh, fucking God. It made me so mad. Like, I was happier when I didn't know about this.
Yeah, I like that, like, when we started this topic on Guild Wars, it was just, you were like, I'm not going to get mad.
Yep.
I just want to hear the facts. Can stay calm.
I came into this wanting to stay calm, and I was, you know what? I was negative, but it's not that negative when I found out that you fucking had to potentially use mastery points to get your subclass. But let's clarify for people at home: you don't need to do that. You just need to invest hero points in your new specialization. But that, it made me so mad. Because everything I've been saying since the game came out was, there's not enough diversity in builds. There's not enough, like, interesting ways to use your character. Like, Guild Wars 1 was built on how fucking customizable, like, every piece of minutiae about your build was. Like, you could really build, like, get into it and, like, play how you wanted to play with any of the classes. But no. Not this. No, of course not. It's too hard to balance. It's too hard to balance. So let's just strip out interesting shit about the game. Let's just make it fucking for babies. Guild Wars 2 is a baby game for babies, is what I'm saying. I'm done. Let's move on to news. I don't want to fucking talk about this anymore. Fuck me. Oh my God. I'm so disappointed in reading that right now. Anyway.
News.
Unlike ArenaNet, a company that I have been very, very negative about in the past, has done something pretty awesome. And I'm, like, actually legitimately excited about what they're doing.
Bungie. No.
I wish. No, Nintendo.
Nintendo, yeah.
Even more surprising. Like, it was Bungie, maybe that's, like, would make some sense. But Nintendo actually seems to be doing cool shit for once. I'm sorry for people who have always loved Nintendo back at home, but Durin's not here. We tried to get Durin for the show. Darbleton, you can attest that I tried to get Durin for the show.
Multiple attempts were made.
Yeah, who's the resident Nintendo lover. But for once, and this is coming from Cynic, Nintendo's finally doing something interesting with their hardware. For like since the GameCube, essentially, they're finally doing something cool with their hardware. So details of the NX have arisen. What have you heard about this, Doubleton, or do you need me to rap about it all?
Not anything.
Okay. What have I told you that Nintendo has a new platform in the works? But
I knew that.
The new platform, which was previous, this is only like previously this was only speculation, but in a grand, like, almost surprising level of insight and intelligence, Nintendo is actually doing this thing. The new platform isn't just a box that sits next to your TV. It is a handheld and a console in one. So going, yeah, potentially. So going alongside their merging of their DS studios and their console studios into essentially one umbrella, they're also potentially unifying their amazing mobile like portable gaming system prowess and their kind of lackluster console prowess into one potentially really freaking awesome thing. Like, if Nintendo executes on this to the level, to the potential of this idea, this could be incredible. Like my favorite thing about Nintendo has always been their portable systems. I've always loved Pokemon. I've always loved, like, the amazing third-party support, like Phoenix Wright, all the, some of my favorite games of all time, Ghost Trick, are third-party published games on Nintendo's portable platforms. But the concept of having those two things merged into one seemed like a pipe dream to many of us a couple months ago, even when it was first rumored. But now it seemed to be even more strongly rumored. And again, this is not confirmed from Nintendo. They've said they are going to talk about it more in 2016, which is fair. But it certainly seems from industry scuttlebutt that it is going to be a unified console and handheld system, which to me makes me really hopeful that their games will be available and playable on both halves of that system, which could be awesome. Like, some of the things I hate about the Vita and was fixed by the Vita TV was that I would love to play Persona 4 Golden on my TV, and before the Vita TV I couldn't do that. Like, having something like that, like, just, like, using that as a basics, like, a start, like, a mental starting point, sounds freaking incredible as to, like, what could potentially happen with Nintendo systems going forward. Like, playing Fire Emblem, even though it looks kind of trashy, like, in terms of art style and everything, really, because the 3DS isn't really powerful enough to play anything properly, like, really beautifully. Playing Fire Emblem on TV sounds like a fun plan. Like, that sounds great to me. Essentially, the moment Nintendo moved away from having the top screen of the 3DS the same size as the bottom screen of the 3DS, and having only one touch screen on that system being the bottom screen, most developers using the 3DS have not done some of the interesting things they did with the previous DS, like the DS original, having, like, good interplay between top and bottom screens. So their mobile platforms are essentially not that differentiated from the Vita, and major problem with the Vita is you want to be playing many of those games on a TV. Like, most people would rather play something like, let's see, something that's unique or to Vita. Let's just stick to the obvious one, Persona 4 Golden. People want to play long RPGs on their TV, not on a portable system. And I've always loved the idea of cross save and so on, and being able to play a single game on two platforms. That's been awesome. But what if you didn't have to do that? What if it was just built from the ground up to be able to take a single game anywhere you go, but come back home, play that on a TV? Always being able to play your favorite games anywhere, anytime, with the power of an actual console potentially behind it. That sounds incredible to me. Like, would it interest you? Like, you're not the biggest console player, but, like, does that sound something that's cool to you?
No, not really.
All right, let's put that aside then. Again, we wanted to get Dura for the show, couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's really exciting to me. Like, I love that shit. The second half of that is Nintendo's actually aiming to do, or in their words, have industry-leading chips, I believe it was, or world standard chips? Or either way, top-of-the-line graphics in their next platform.
Top men are working on their chips.
Top men are working on their chips. And that is top also men. Freaky awesome, because you and I both agree, and it's pretty obvious that the PS4 and Xbox One are kind of lean dogs when it comes to their power. Like, sure, they can play the same next-gen games as you can on PC, but
it's also a thing of, like, they are very good for the price of $400.
Absolutely.
The technology isn't that, like, we're kind of plateauing on hardware that is, like, revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
Pixel, yeah.
But even then, yeah. Like, games are already having a significant difference in visual quality between PC and consoles. Like something like The Witcher 3 looks way better on PC than it does on the console and runs 60 frames on PC, whereas Sony locked 30 on consoles, I believe. Unless I'm being crazy. Like they obviously have some standouts like Metal Gear, which look fantastic on consoles and PC, but like it's getting to that point where it's already seeming like this generation is just not going to be, aside from first-party studios, because obviously Uncharted 4 is probably going to be the best game ever, like in terms of visual quality, when that comes out early next year. But because that game just looks mind-blowingly good. But yeah, aside from very specific games like that, we're already hitting that limit. So yeah, it's really interesting to me what it will do to consoles and gaming at large if Nintendo does come out with a box that's significantly more powerful than current ones at a time which is potentially only midway through their cycle. See, everyone knows like consoles generally are on like a 5 or maybe 10, but hopefully that won't happen again, year cycle, where obviously you want a new console coming out in that kind of period just to keep up with hardware. But this is only like, what, year 2 of, or is it year 3, of the PlayStation 4? Year 2, I think? Next year's year 3?
Yeah, we're coming up to year 3.
Yeah, we're getting on year 3. So yeah, only 3 years in, potentially having like a really big power gap introduced. And that is awesome to me as well. Like the potential for A, having the best looking games, like if they nail cross platform compatibility, for example, like having something that's easily portable from Xbox One and PS4 to the NX, if they nail that, but also have this like handheld kind of capability, that could be it, that I'm cra- this might be crazy to say, but that console could be my favorite console going forward. And that's nuts to me. I would never have thought I'd say that about Nintendo system. Knowing Nintendo, and this is again, one to have during this podcast, they will fuck this up somehow. Like, incredibly. Their online system will probably be broken and not work, or require friend codes. Like, I cannot even imagine the shitstorm that'll be generated.
Or, I mean, like, even if it does work, it still runs into the issue that, like, Sony's having to deal with of speeds.
Mm. Yeah, internet connection speeds, etc., right? Is that what you mean? Or
the internet connection speed.
Yeah. Like especially when you talk about streaming between a console and a handheld, that could definitely not work. The second way they can incredibly fuck this up is if their definition of industry-leading chips is out. So, specifically, what if they meant industry-leading Android-like chips? Like ARM processors.
I mean, that's another option.
It is an option, and it would be one that would make me pretty much rage quit this industry as well. No, it wouldn't. But it would make me laugh in a way that I don't want to, in that like, ha ha ha, Nintendo's done it again, they've done fucked up. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I want more quality in this industry. I want to be able to play the Zelda that's coming up in the best way possible. I want that next platform to be an amazing current gen equivalent slash maybe better platform that can play something like the next gen Zelda, like the current Zelda that's being released or being worked on. I want that. That would be awesome. But if that thing is just like, hey, the handheld thing you carry around is the actual fucking processing unit, so it has like 2 hours of battery life and a ARM processor in it. Hey, do you want to see those like games powered by ARM processors on your TV? Because they'll look great. If that's what they do, that's just sad and won't make the pivot that I think they need to make to be successful again.
It's also something to consider is, like, especially with Nintendo, is they have a new CEO?
Yes.
CFO? Like, I mean, like, it's how that company reacts, especially with, like, the...
Oh, just president. I think it might be president.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Basically, like, yeah, the new leadership, the fact that, like, the Wii U wasn't successful as the Wii, like, are they going to go for a lot more mobile sided stuff, especially with their games? Who knows? I think it's worth considering also that because the PlayStation and the Xbox aren't like amazing top of the line sort of equipment, we might start seeing a change in game development from like the best graphics to maybe something like maybe more interesting things like the Shadow of Mordor game.
Oh yeah, yeah,
where
absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like, hey, we have to start using these processors rather than these video cards.
Exactly.
And we have to come up with really interesting game designs, and that might be the way forward. Sort of.
That would be
stuff.
Awesome. Like having, like, there's so much scope out there for especially like, and I'm already kind of tired of open world games, but for like the open world game has so many places for it to grow, given that we now have everything having a base of like 8 gigs of RAM, right? Like it's just, and powerful processors. Like you're right. Like you can actually have a world the size of The Witcher 3 that isn't pre-canned in the way The Witcher 3 is. Like Witcher 3, you walk around that world and you do hear the same dialogue over and over again. You if you walk around a town, you do see the same girl doing like the same skipping game over and over again. It would be incredible if they made one of those games that, because of the power of these consoles, you could have every NPC in the whole world on a AI track that actually like makes self decisions and does stuff that you may see when you come across again. That's Noob's big hope for the new Fallout game, is that they do really execute on that. But yeah, we'll have to see. That's pretty much it. Like that's the big Nintendo news. I just wanted to say how positive my outlook for it is. I really hope they fucking knock it out of the park. They have a good online system. They stop using friend codes. They have fast servers or a BitTorrent like based client like Steam that can really output like saturate your connection. Like there's so many things that they could potentially do right with a new system, especially considering that the industry insiders are leaking information that makes it sound like they're doing those things. It is so cool to see Nintendo potentially come back out on top. Because, yeah, this industry needs more drama. It needs more shaking up. It needs more power. I love it. This is why I love the gaming industry. I love new hardware. And Nintendo's doing it this time. And that's the biggest surprise of all. And with that, anything else this week? I just want to talk about that. That's half the reason we recorded this episode.
No, that's pretty much it. Yeah. I mean, like, there's a bunch of little things happening in the news world and all that. I think you and I off-air talked about Payday 2, but if you're a fan of the game, you are well aware of it. If you're not a fan of the game, they're doing some stuff that the community's getting all kind of mad about, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess one final thing is just if you're a fan of the Giant Bombs, like we try to make this podcast for, and you don't know, send a little love to Jason and Lisa A. Stryker, because they are now parents.
Yay. Lisa's
they
first son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not Jason's, but he's, Lisa's.
Oh, okay.
Griffin,
oh, I think.
That's a cool name. All right. I'll give you that. Griffin's a good name. Strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just quickly looking through it. The stuff we haven't talked about yet, like just to note, because they've been talked about by other places, but I just want to touch on it. Stuff like The Reckoning.
Yes, that was an amazing thing. I'm glad I threw some money into that. That was a cool
thing. How much
thing.
Did they raise? So that, just to break it down, the Dan Reichert and Patrick Klepek.
10,000, I think?
No, it was definitely over 15. It was definitely over 15 because I saw it at 14.
$12,885.
Okay, I swear I saw 14 when I brought up the page. But yeah, sure, $12,000.
Maybe it converts to Australian dollars.
Ooh, you're probably right. You know what? You're probably right. Actually, it probably does. That's weird.
In USDs, it's $12,885 split 50-50 for.
Oh, nice.
I think it's Heart Association and. Something for battling and anxiety. I can't remember what.
Right.
But yeah, it was a cool thing that came out of the Giant Bomb Mario Maker madness.
So Giant Bomb has these great videos where they essentially take chat suggestions input, to make giant bomb, so not, to make community made Mario Super Mario Maker levels. And Patrick Klepek, famous personality on YouTube, essentially has been playing these levels and uploading his playthroughs, and usually in many cases it can take him like 2-3 hours to beat because they're usually all the way fucked up. So Dan Riker, they've essentially made like essentially a little ring of people between Dan, Jeff Gerstmann, and Patrick Klepek, of people who make those two make levels, and he kind of beats them on his show. And finally, what happened was the Rikening, which was Dan using some ideas he's learned by playing with the community, made one really fucked up level.
Not only that, he made it specifically for Patrick.
Yeah.
Game developers made levels designed like, hey, this is challenging for this type of person, mm-hmm. but rarely has it been done where a level or a game has been made for one person.
Yeah.
That was purely for the suffering of one person.
Exactly. Purely for the suffering. Just to see the look on Patrick's face when he sees some of the fuck yous in that level. So Dan made a level, and he thought it was unbeatable. Well, he thought it was essentially unbeatable. At least not beatable within 72 hours by Patrick Klepek. So he laid down a challenge. And Patrick Klepek accepted that challenge based on a $100 bet. Whoever won, their favorite charity would get that $100 from the other. Patrick said, fuck it, let's go big with this. And he started that massive like donate-a-thon kind of awesome...
GoFundMe, I think, was the website they used.
Yeah, GoFundMe, little thing where the community started pitching in, and hence they raised $12,000+. But I just wanted to talk about how crazy that playthrough was. As a person who still hasn't even watched all of it, I've just watched bits and pieces of it, of like Patrick, without the help from chat or anything else, playing through Dan's fucked up level is incredible. He takes like 7 hours to beat it. It's like a fucking raid, but just him. Just Matt slamming his head against this ridiculous fucking level. It is awesome.
Also, he had to learn things on his own that like chat knew, and like he wasn't looking at chat. Chat couldn't tell him like, hey, this is a mechanic you need to know.
Yeah.
And so he learned things about Mario that he did not know prior to playing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess
a good example is that isn't any spoilers. In Giant Bomb's second level, Patrick didn't know you could put down a power block. He thought you could only throw it. So he had to like self-teach himself how to put down a power block to get up onto like the right level to get through this door. Like that's an example of, yeah.
That and like throw a Koopa up in the air.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I guess one other thing, especially for you, Sinek, I'm curious if you've seen this before we end this. Kotaku's Jason Schreier ran an article a couple days ago that was basically a in-depth breakdown taken from multiple interviews of current and former employees at Bungie.
Yep.
Of basically what happened to that game when it first launched, like last year.
What a clusterfuck they have.
And it is a really good read, and basically like another great story of like, hey, these games are in development for years and they come out and they're hot trash.
Yep.
Because they've been working on it for several years, what you're playing could only be like 1 year out of a 3 year development. Exactly. Where they just decide to scrap it halfway through.
Yeah. They decided to scrap it like a year before it came out and spent a year just patching together the shit they already had.
Making a Frankenstein order. Game.
Like it's an incredibly interesting read, and I don't want to spoil too much of it, but that's where I got the information on like fucking people from Blizzard, like gave a talk on like how to fucking make games properly, essentially. And that's what they implemented for The Taken King, which explains why they did such a good job on it. For the most part, except for the new raid in hardware.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, it's absolutely a great read. It makes so much sense. Like so many of the fan speculations of like, hey, this fucking story, what the fuck's with this? Like there's nothing here. Apparently before they had like full on, like a really in-depth story with like 2 minute cutscenes before and after the actual missions, so you really know what's going on. Characters were entirely different. So like the Queen's brother wasn't the Queen's brother. He was like some like this like standalone
random kind of dude, yeah,
bounty hunter kind of dude who you met that had like the personality of Cade Six, who's only just shown up in will become a real big personality in this recent expansion. Like, so much shit was like moved around. The stranger from the previous one from the first campaign was actually like the fucking like helper of a war mind and not supposed to be her own big character at all, which kind of explains why she kind of disappears after that one. And it's like, it makes the "there's no time to explain why there's no time to explain" line make sense, because like they didn't have anything. They were working from fucking the ashes of a script to put together what the fuck they made. And that really shows. That article is great. In fact, you know what? Moving on to plugs, because fuck it. There's only two of us, so I'm going to wrestle the show from your hands.
Just, oh no.
That's my plug. That's my plug this week.
Oh, but that was going to be my plug.
Okay, I have another plug if you don't want to take that plug. I have another plug. I have two plugs.
I guess my other plug is going to be, I've been jamming out to, again, a callback. While I was doing the Dark Souls permadeath thing, I listened a lot to rainwave.cc, which is still a thing. It's still amazing.
What is that? What is that?
Rainwave.cc is a website that streams, for the most part, video game music. Straight up OSTs from video games, or you can channel it to being only chiptunes or only orchestral, OC remixes, stuff like that.
I bet there's a website out there that just plays really high definition, real life storm noise. Because that's what I thought it was when you said rainwave.cc. I was like,
no, you're thinking of like rain. I'm sure there are like websites. The other thing I want to talk about is Galaxy's OST. Album is pretty dang good too, especially that White Tusk. You got to listen to that White Tusk song. If nothing else, check that out, because it's a really good boss fight music. But yeah, he's got a Bandcamp, which I will put in the link, because it's like scntfc.bandcamp.com.
My second plug is that's pretty funny. And you're not, that's actually pretty funny. Say that again. Say that again.
scntfc.bandcamp.com. Nice. Scientific American, I guess, is the longhand of it, but that's the guy who did the music.
So my second plug this week is a new book has come out by Brandon Sanderson, who is probably the most prolific nowadays and most vaunted fantasy author of the modern era, essentially since, what do I say, probably aside from fucking George R. R. Martin, and maybe, yeah, he's pretty much it. Aside from him, aside from the Game of Thrones guy, Brandon Sanderson is the preeminent fantasy author. He has a new series based on a previous series that you don't have to read for this to work, that's come out. It's called Mistborn. Let me just see if I can get the name of it. So essentially it's a series based on this concept that people have powers based on what metals they can burn in their body. So they literally ingest metal, of like flakes of metal, and they can like burn it. He loves systems where there's like an active like resource that people have to expend when they use magic, and it's part of the reason why there's so much dramatic tension in his novels and why they're really awesome. So yes, Mistborn: Shadows of Self is the first of a new trilogy by him, which is essentially called the Wax and Wayne trilogy, which is the two dudes. It's a fantasy with guns that is incredibly good, based on the prequel book, The Alloy of Law, which came out a couple of years ago. It wasn't originally supposed to be a series, but people liked the prequel so much that he made a whole series out of it. And it's gotten excellent reviews. So Mistborn: Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson is my second plug.
Cool.
Is that it for us?
Yeah, I guess before we end it, one final fire update. The fire is going out.
Oh man, that's kind of depressing, actually. It's kind of like this podcast. It started with like strong.
Maybe on fire. A little bit
started on fire. Definitely off topic. And then petered out. With a lack of news. for me to care about.
Goodbye, Cynic.
This is becoming really introspective and depressing. Does anything matter? Have we ever made a good podcast?
We're going for quantity over quality.
Thanks, Stapleton, for the episode.
Good night, folks.